Here at thesyncbook.com, we are a community exploring the impossible. Artists and seekers looking at the interconnected nature of all things. As of 2015, Syncbook Radio has over 25 gigs of high-quality audio without a single advertisement. And we keep on growing. We now have 6 radio programs producing regular content. Clearly, we have outgrown one model and are birthing another. We have spent the last 5 years attempting to build a space where researchers and seekers can take an honest approach to this material, where people can look at these weird things without being laughed at or yelled at, to build a community that encourages each other to continue to learn and to explore. This quest began in earnest with the publication of the first Syncbook back in 2011. Since then, it has ballooned into a major undertaking, and thesyncbook.com has become a repository for cutting-edge media and all things sync. Along the way, we have found amazing allies to become an unparalleled creative team. We have met the most supportive and loving fans. And, of course, we've bumped heads with a few assholes. With all of your help, we've been able to grow and provide a platform to more artists. Now, we are asking you to take the next step with us. After investing a ton of time, energy, money, and hard fucking work, thesyncbook.com has just finished its major overhaul, and we are ready for you to make yourselves cozy here. We've installed new players for our podcasts with streaming from fast and reliable hosting. We added expanded search functions that tap into classic sync video libraries. And our new member section gives access to our full archive of over 600 hours of podcasts, as well as members-only media, HD videos, and transcripts. There's also discounted physical copies of Syncbook Press titles, as well as Google Hangouts with the radio hosts every month. You'll also have an opportunity to tap into additional exclusive media inside Dropbox 42. For those of you unable to purchase memberships, rest assured that the 3 most recent episodes of all podcasts will remain free for everyone, every week. So regular listeners will be able to continue enjoying these shows uninterrupted. While financial realities dictate that we can't keep up this level of output and continue to give away everything for free, we've made every possible effort to make this something all of you would really want to be a part of. Please visit thesyncbook.com/membership now. Listening to Always Record from Syncbook Radio and thesyncbook.com. Always Record is a series of long-form roundtable conversations. Today is episode 111, and we welcome the lovely Kira Young.
American woman, gonna mess your mind. American woman, she gonna mess your mind. American woman, gonna mess your mind. American woman, gonna mess your mind. Say A, say M, say E, say R, say I, C, say A. American woman, gonna mess your mind. American woman, gonna mess your mind. American woman, gonna mess your mind.
Man, it is
life.
It is not easy.
It is not easy. You're right about that. Definitely. But I don't care that I don't have TV because it'll give me more time to write. and less time to get sucked into bullshit on TV.
Yeah, TV such garbage anyway.
You know?
It's really...
Yeah, it really is. And it's weird that I know about things on it that I don't watch. I really have been looking at that lately. How the fuck do I know who the Kardashians are? I don't watch anything that they do, or, you know, I don't know how, you know, it just sort of seeps in.
It's
whether you want it to
or
not. Yeah,
that to me is proof of you know, call it mind control, call it brainwashing, call it propaganda, call it what you want to call it. The fact that somehow the Kardashians are in our brain as a cultural artifact. I don't know. I also don't know what the hell they are. Like, I don't know what they're famous for.
Mm-hmm.
But the right. But the fact that I know of them.
They're famous for being famous.
Gotcha. But as a cultural artifact, the fact that you can create a phenomenon out of famous for being famous is, you know, is not only impressive in a dark sort of way, but it's also proof of a culture creation. That people can make, there's someone out
yes.
there, whether it's marketing executives or a Hollywood executive, someone out there is making your landscape. And I'm just as guilty as anyone is. Like I said,
right.
I'm aware of it. I haven't watched TV in years, but I am aware of a Kardashian and, you know, stupid things like that.
Yeah.
What
and
about
it's
you, John?
Like somebody,
I'm sure you're...
somebody in some office.
What, the Kardashians and how much I hate them? it is like an
yeah.
interesting subject. Just I've been thinking about, you know, for a while now, just the stuff that's embedded in my mind and how I can't get all this pop culture nonsense from both my past and my present out, because I just want room for stuff that's good for me. And so often this is not. So actually, I was playing a game for a little while. I was seeing how long I could go without knowing the new fucking prince's name or whatever, and I went a while without knowing, because when I'm in the store my eyes just go towards tabloids. It's so weird, right? Or I'm driving and I was playing a game, like, how long can I keep my eyes off a billboard? It's not easy to do. I bet if anybody tries to do it, they'll find out how hard it is. So I just said,
yeah.
Well, let's see how long I can go without knowing this stupid piece of pop culture. I don't know, just, and I went about a good year. I don't know how old this kid is, but I went a while and then it got spoiled on me, but it was a good exercise to try to do, but it's really fucking hard. It's this matrix of just like, well, lies, but then just like stuff to fill your head that has no real utility beyond. I mean, you can make, obviously these people are symbolic and that's why sink heads play with them, but it really is a treasure in the trash scenario. And it's like, I'd rather just find treasure in treasure at this point, or finding what's better or more better for my mental diet than to ponder these people or what they even mean to my reality. It's like, I don't care what they mean beyond them being distractions.
Kira, can I maybe just sort of jump right into it? There was something I wanted to ask you about as a... Just a sort of question that I was curious of your perception. I was talking. I don't know if necessarily the backstory is necessary, but I'm sure you're well aware of these sort of tropes in writing and storytelling. And we, you know, we've talked about this idea of the I don't know. You know, the Asian person is gonna know some sort of martial arts. And, you know, there's these sort of, the hero is always white and their ethnic ally, even if there's also another character that's not white, they're given a sort of a lens to through which to be seen. So they still conform to a stereotype, even if it's a somewhat positive stereotype, right? If we can call it that. And
right.
So I know the native cause is really important to you, and I'm just sort of curious about this. You know, what seems to be both there's a mystical sort of shamanistic element. that gets incorporated as part of a pop culture trope. And certainly, you know, there's a new age movement that sort of, in a way, almost co-opts any natural spirituality and maybe and traditions that might actually be authentic and not just blown out of proportion in pop culture-wise. I'm just sort of curious to get your opinion or thoughts on... I know it's a very vague and broad area, but I'm just sort of curious to get your thoughts on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could take that in a lot of different directions. You know, inside the Indian world, that's something that Indians constantly make fun of, you know, that there's this perception from the non-Indian world of, you know, all natives are shamans and, you know, that kind of thing. And so there's even... You know, so that's always joked about among Indians themselves. And so there's that. And then there's Indians viewing themselves from that same lens, from that same non-Indian lens of, well, you know, am I a real Indian if I'm not a shaman? That, you know, that kind of thing. You know, the other side of it, viewing oneself from the old Hollywood lens of, you know, the old Westerns and, you know, the silent Indian or the fighting Indian or all of these things. It gets really, really mixed up. And then there's things like blood quantum law. So, you know, we define ourselves by degrees, you know, how much Indian are you? And then we play this I'm more Indian than you game. And, well, I'm a full blood and you're a mixed blood and I'm more Indian than you, when in actuality, you know, that's something that doesn't really even exist. You are or you're not, you know. My own identity has changed over the years to just not even really knowing what I was or am, to, you know, to throwing off the whole concept of race completely, because really all there is culture. And race is something that we've been taught to believe in, but it really doesn't exist. So, you know, for myself, I don't know, it is very broad. It comes into my mind from a lot of different directions too, because I'm looking at it internally and I'm looking at it externally and I'm looking at sort of that interplay and the way that, you know, not only on the grand scale, people's perception of themselves changes throughout time, but on the individual level, it does as well throughout our lives. We, you know, our concept of ourself changes. So, I mean, that's one place to start. And then we can look at it politically too. When you said the cause, you know, the Indian cause, there's forces out there that have, you know, really used that, for their own personal gain instead of really for the gain of the people, you know, in a bigger sense. And I'm talking in particular about AIM, you know, the liberators of Indian country, who really are the ones holding the, you know, the jailhouse keys. And then the whole environmental movement. Well, you know, now you're not a real Indian unless you're fighting for the earth, you know, and you're not fighting for the earth unless, you know, you view it from some, you know, left-wing point of view or something. You know, it's not just what it is, your connection to the earth, and that's what you care about, and go from there. It gets put through this political
Oh, sure. I'm quite familiar with that. Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess that those would be my initial thoughts. I mean, I was all over the place too, but I was just kind of trying to...
So like, as we you touched on this idea of environmentalism gets pushed through a political lens, which I have a tremendous amount of sympathy and deep understanding of what you mean by that. But so I can see how that's, as an outsider, I could see how that gets connected to the sort of Indian peoples of, again, it touches back to that sort of mystical shamanist, you know, you're supposed to naturally have a connection to the land that we white people just don't have, right? So it's, in itself, it's sort of, again, it's just playing on these stereotypes. But it also, it's reinforcing different levels of racial elitism, right? Which I suppose any sort of racism does, even if, again, if it's a positive, quote-unquote positive stereotype. If Asian people are smart and black people are athletic or something, you know? It's like, those are good things to be. I would like to be smart and athletic. But again, it's this idea of a sort of hierarchy or a... something like that. So you said you've now been sort of questioned the whole idea of race. I'd like to hear, you know, is it as simple as we're all humans? Or do you have a different sort of point you're trying to make?
It is that simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is that simple. But at the same time, even if you look at the so-called science behind race, it's bullshit. There's so many anomalies that, you know, that's because we're all an anomaly because it doesn't exist. It's not real. There, we have different features. We have different skin color. Those are within the human, you know, gene pool or whatever. There's genetics, sure, but you know, it really the concept of race. What we've come to believe about race is all false. It's all made up. You know, it's all this hierarchy thing, you know, and so we believe in this hierarchy thing because we have been led down this path to believe that race exists, but it really doesn't.
And it, tying that back a bit to what you were saying earlier, it's when people, all people who are oppressed to one degree or another, and again, this is a wide spectrum, but at the same time, it comes to a point where you begin to engage in like, cultural cannibalism. So you start consuming your own kind because you don't feel powerless to change what's really bearing down on you. So it's we lash out at whatever's closest to us, and then we seek whatever superiority within our group of choice or group of birth or somewhere in between. So it's like there's a good book called Pedagogy of the Oppressed, which is both has good and bad aspects to it, but it details this phenomenon pretty well. But there's all kinds of books written about it. And it's like, if people realize the power they had, like facing what was really the core problems of whatever was driving their anxiety, etc. It's like, I don't know, there's not much humans can't do. But, and then on the other hand, it's like this formulaic identity thing. It's, we've totally adopted the programming of the culture, which is do A plus B and U equal normal or somewhere in between. There's all this, there's a menu you can pick from, but these identities to a point become so rigid. And that really is what like Western culture is about, is rigid and codifying and labeling. And in that way, we've already been like infected with the mind virus. If you can't even see past that, it's like really fundamental how we even think or engage in whatever we think of as an alternative. We're still kind of generating the same memes that are thousands of years old. It's kind of strange. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah, and at the same time, Western culture planted its own seed to destroy itself with diversity and inclusion and all that.
Well, it's the way they
destroy itself becomes better.
Well, it's the way it was done, right? I mean, like, they weren't bringing in diverse peoples for the better of everyone. It was always for cheap labor or some kind of exploitation. And then, like, whatever we think of as integration over time has been against that backdrop of historical hate or, you know, it's just, it's wounds that have never been cleared up and no amount of money could ever clear them up. And we're all such children that it doesn't seem like they can be fixed in so many ways, but it's just like we're dealing with it. And I don't know, I don't know what the answer is, but it's tricky.
I've always sort of seen that as, you know, I know the Red Ice crowd likes to now paint this as this is white genocide, but that's that's only from the perspective of people who've been in at the top of the patriarchy for so long. It seems like, hey, what the fuck are you doing? You're screwing up the game we had going on here. When instead, what it really is if you want to say, like, again, not as you say, the seed of its own destruction. To me, it is a, for lack of a better term, it is a conspiracy. But it's the idea of John saying, right, we always brought in people to be cheap labor. And all this sort of diversity, inclusion sort of thing is, guess what, Mr. America? You too can be a slave. You know, you too can basically work for no money and be trapped in our system. And congratulations, you're equal now. It's instead of lifting all boats, right. It's like everyone could be a slave to the corporate hell. That I thought was sort of, that's how I sort of interpret it. Not that you know, whites are being singled out for this genocide. It's just they're getting knocked down to a lower level rather than everyone being lifted up, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, it makes sense. You know, and when did Europeans start calling themselves white? When did that happen? I mean, when I traveled over there in the 80s, I never heard anyone call themselves white. That's a recent thing, and it's an import from America. And white was just made up. White was a term made up in America to group together all people who had light skin so that they could form a majority. So that, you know, because what does it mean? It means what you're not. Not black, not Indian, not Mexican, you know. It doesn't mean what you are, because there's so many things that you could be under that terminology. So when did Europeans pick that up? You know, because before you were Italian or you were Irish or you were English or you were, you know, Swedish or whatever. But now they're white. When did that happen?
That's interesting too. Red Ice is using the word white a lot, and okay, they're Europeans, so where did that word come from? And clearly an import, because look at their news feed. Half of it is Fox News shit. That is like anyone in America knows is brainless, moronic television that shouldn't be trusted at all. And whatever truth is in there, you probably shouldn't even broadcast it to begin with, because it's just toxic. Same with CNN or any of them, right? I'm not like singling out Fox News because I don't, whatever. They're all bad, but Fox News is maybe the most extreme. And it's like, that's their scholarship. That's their media literacy. In the file. Right. It's if you don't know where your shit's coming from, you really shouldn't adopt these words. Otherwise, you look kind of foolish in hindsight, because it's like you're being duped. You're being duped. Or if not duped, it's like misled. It's just, there's all kinds of misdirection going on that's just fascinating to look at. And
you know the percentage of Americans, when they're asked their nationality, they'll say their ethnicity. Whereas, I mean, other people, I mean, I guess that's just simply, it sounds like that's almost just what you're saying. There's a huge lack of, there's a lot of ignorance in that regard. I found from, I was talking to somebody who was in a position where they were having to see people fill out all these forms in America and who had done it in other countries, and was just like, what did they told me it was, the percentage was astonishing. It was like 70% or something of Americans that came in to fill in the form, every time they were asked their nationality, they'd give their ethnicity. They're like, that's not what I asked you. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's interesting. Wow.
Well, David, thank you for being with us.
Oh, sure. I don't feel very professional right now. I got like 3 hours sleep, and I thought we were doing 11, and it was a miscommunication. But hi, I'm here. It's nice to meet you.
Hi, David.
Nice to meet you too. Well, so, I feel like I jumped in on a very interesting conversation here.
Really, really lighthearted, really like fun and fancy free, but we can go wherever.
So David, you actually made a really good point, though, is this idea of ethnicity. We have ethnicity, nationality, race, and culture. These are all sort of different terms for different things. But, you know, Kira, you were saying what's really important, the thing that we actually can value is culture, in a sense, or tradition, things like that. So, you know, when people say, we're losing our culture, those darn immigrants are, you know, taking away Swedish purity or whatever the heck, right? But I have some sympathy for trying to retain that culture, right? Trying to retain those traditions and things like that. Like that, those should be made special and should be remembered. And at the same time, you should, you know, you Swedish man with your wonderful traditions can go fuck Black lady with her beautiful traditions and make beautiful mixed babies that have both without having to say how, you know, you're distorting the gene pool or some Hitler bullshit like that. That's the part that screws with my head. I mean, I grew up in New York where the area I grew up in is literally statistically the most diverse place on earth, not just New York, but the specific area of New York, the most diverse place on earth. I never saw a lack of culture. I saw all of those cultures celebrated, but I mean, I will be honest, what I also saw is compartmentalization. So you would have, you know, all the Indonesian people are going to kind of group together, and you would and retain their culture there, and then it might overlap with a Greek neighborhood and a Mexican neighborhood and you know. So it's like, yeah, there was something that had to kind of self-contain to maintain that culture, and yet it would also overlap and mix in with these other things. And I that was so normal to me, but also I'm seeing a side of it where I'm not saying it's the greatest thing. I'm not claiming it's the perfect system. I'm just saying this is what seems to happen naturally. So you throw everyone together, they do try and hold on to their traditions while at the same time getting along pretty darn swimmingly with everyone else. That to me makes the most sense. I'm sort of curious when you said, you know, race was bullshit, what's important is culture. Take that.
Well, culture kind of springs from language, right? And so there's this big thing about, you know, America being an English-speaking country. Well, really? you know, and you have there's a meme going around now where it has this guy's patch on his jacket or whatever, and it says, you know, I'm not going to be forced to speak a foreign language because somebody moved here or whatever. You know, just the typical sort of anti-immigrant sentiment. And then the meme says, like, I like this, does it come in Lakota, you know? So you know, culture is very tied to language, so I really support anybody who wants to hang on to their language no matter, you know, where they're from. You know, and so that's where people get under each other's skin, when it's like, well, I'm not going to speak your language and blah, blah, blah. But it's also the first way that you can really connect with somebody from another culture, is to take the time to learn their language. And you really, that's when you learn the depths of their culture, is by literally speaking their language. So,
right. That's the irony.
And that's probably.
That's extreme irony, where people want to be one, and it's supposed to be this kind of like enlightened position, and there's truth to it at the same time, and that's the challenge. It's because you want to see how are we alike, and how we see how we're alike, and how much we're able to recognize that is generally taken to be an indicator of how we're able to get along. Yet the irony is, it's through the distinctions in the culture and the recognition of distinctions that allows you to really be able to relate. Like, it's not just how you get along that allows you to relate. It's how much you can recognize the person's distinction that allows them to receive you. Like, I mean, without that recognition, mm-hmm. it's very difficult to truly connect. And so, yeah, I just people like to give a lot of lip service to that we're one. And it's like, yeah, that's true. And, you know, it's in seeing how we're one that we're able to see that the distinctions show themselves. And yet that's what's supposed to be separating us. And yet, if we were more just open in general, doesn't mean you have to know everything about somebody's culture. But the more open you are to their culture and interested, genuinely interested, there's no way to really fake that, you know, because people can feel energetics, you know. The more interested you are in someone's culture, the more well they'll receive you. If you travel in cultures that are much different than your own, you know, you'll find how true that is. If you're interested in their philosophies or their ideas that are distinct for them, they'll welcome you with such more open arms than you just mm-hmm. trying to look for how you're the same. You know, it's like, we know we're the same, you know, mm-hmm. hopefully. You know? Yeah.
So maybe there's this unconscious thing where, you know, I don't want to learn your, you know, that where that I don't want to learn your language thing comes from is that on the other side of that, you have to have something to share too, you know, when you're learning someone else's culture. And that kind of goes back to the white thing that we've, you know, white people been programmed to define themselves by what you're not. And most white people don't speak their native language. We speak English in America, right? But that's really only a native language for one kind of white people. There's so many more different kinds of white people, but yet, you know, the Italians and the Irish, you know, and the Swedish are all speaking English. They're speaking this bureaucratic language that doesn't even have the intricacies of all of these other languages that have that power to convey the depth of culture. So, I mean, maybe unconsciously people who don't speak their native language instinctively know they have nothing to give back in that exchange. And so that's where that fear of I'm not learning your language comes from.
I think that's really, really powerful statement there. And I mean, like, all right, so I went, my experience going to Japan was sort of a heartbreak at how much, and at the time I'm thinking sort of American culture had invaded, you know, I don't know, maybe 25%, I'm going to pull a number out of my ass, but 25% of the signs in Japan were in English. And I'm like, that's really bizarre. You know, like, why mm-hmm. would that be? And sort of like you go into like a store and they're playing Britney Spears on the radio. And like, wait, why the hell is that? They have their own pop stars. They have their own language. They have three different versions of their damn language. Like, why you don't need a sign in English? Like, but to see how much this sort of quote-unquote American culture was there, what, you know, I'm quick, you know, what I very quickly turn that around in my mind is, wait, no, this is the global corporate culture. This isn't even American culture. This is global corporate culture that's just sort of being,
right,
that's infecting the world. And that being said, even though it's not truly an American culture, when you say we don't really have anything to share, that really speaks loudly to me. Like, we don't have an identity outside of the global corporate culture. We are defined by our pop culture. And the only thing that we really freaking produce is, you know, music and movies. That's why it's so ingrained into who we are.
Well, remember too, Alan, that the number one thing that other countries get to view Western culture through is actually porn. porn is, you know, the majority of it comes from like LA and Middle Eastern countries all over. I mean, places, you know, that are so far removed from, you know, relating to, you know, to Western people, their number one media that they watch is pornography, which is that kind of that's kind of humiliating.
That's scary.
It kind of blew me away at one point. I had Ethiopian friend tell me this, and I had never given it that much thought. I mean, I knew people watch porn all over, and he's like, "No, you don't understand."
All right, that would be, these are our big exports. It's like we have, you know, violent action movies and pornography, and that's sort of, and McDonald's. And so, right, I think this, as you said, Kira, this sort of speaks to not so much, the issue is not really some defect in the, you know, the standard guy from Tennessee that doesn't like Mexican people. It's what he's really reacting to is an absence within himself. If we can sort of generalize, psychoanalyze. That's really profound. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so how do you heal that? You know, certainly here's what I've seen. And since I've moved back to the East Coast and started going to Pennsylvania powwows, you know, when around the time my son was born in 2005. And since then, there's been an explosion of people, basically mostly on the East Coast. Indian people are all mixed because of how expansion happened. It started in the East and moved west. And so the further west you go, the more full bloods you'll run into. I'll just put it that way. So out west at powwows, I stood out because I was the white girl on the drum. And out here, my husband stands out because he's full blood on the drum. And so I guess how do you heal that is that, you know, there's this huge explosion, and there's a lot of ignorance about people not really knowing about their Indian culture. And that's, you know, that's by design too. And so there's this tremendous amount of awkwardness at these Eastern powwows because there's so many mixed bloods and there's so that it feels like inauthentic. It feels like awkward. And so I don't know where I was going with that, but that's part of the healing is like to be willing to be in that awkward space of discovering a part of yourself that you've sort of been locked away from or led away from or kept from.
Now, you said this is by design. I'd like to get some of your sort of thoughts on that. Like what in your mind is the sort of, for lack of a better term, control system? Is it a well-organized and like thought-out Grand Illuminati plan?
Yeah.
Or is it a collection of loose-knit psychopathic motherfuckers?
Yeah, it's both, I think. It's both, you know. So if you look at, well, first off, the blood quantum laws, right? Now you'd get to define yourself in mathematics. You know, no other race in the world do you say, well, how much black are you? Yeah, and how much white are you? Percentage wise, you know,
well,
give it to me.
If I may just
it's
actually,
absurd even. Think
can I actually just throw something in there? Is I know within Hispanic communities and black communities, I mean, maybe times are changing a little bit more just very recently as, again, people are, it's more acceptable to be proud again and stuff like that. But let me tell you something. There is, particularly within Hispanic culture, there is a hierarchy of how light-skinned to how dark-skinned you are. You know, I have Dominican friends, like that you saw this one guy, you would think he's a black man. Like he is as dark as you could possibly get. You know, but he's Dominican, then you can find someone else that's Dominican that's white skin. He would be automatically on a sort of higher social strata. And I mean, I have friends who, like, they were like, if they were going to marry a darker skinned girl, their family would be upset. Oh, you're putting us backwards. You know, the goal is to find the lighter skinned girl to advance us socially. It's a complicated thing in many, many areas. I just wanted to throw that out there. It's not a unique problem, let's say. Sorry.
Oh, and real quick, there's this amazing video of, I don't know, Bill Cosby was in it for some reason when Bill Cosby was seen as someone with a conscience. Anyway, it was like probably like 30, 40 years ago, did this experiment where they gave kids of various races a white doll and like a black doll or some, you know, some usually something like that, that type of dichotomy. And they were asked to identify which the good doll was and which the bad doll was. And like even the African American kids, they would point to the black doll and say that's the bad doll. So there's like a level of self-hatred taught to everybody. But at certain times, like, again, race as in many ways a construct can just be another thing to guilt people into whatever, serving the machine or serving this kind of like, soul killing, world killing monstrosity that we're a part of. So it's like, I have a hard time wondering if that can be changed as much as is like, finding your individual solution and then forming communities from that new identity. But that's the thing. Like,
well, here's the difference. The way that white people are programmed and the way that non-white people are programmed. Yes. Okay. White people are responsible for their own feelings and everybody else's as well. That's where the anger comes in, because white people are programmed that you're responsible for this bullshit, for this psychopathic, bureaucratic, corporate takeover of the world. Because of the color of your skin, you're responsible. Mm. When in actuality, that's bullshit, right? But then there really is a very real thing where there's advantages to having lighter skin. You know, that's real. And so you're taught to have guilt over that or try to use that to, you know, help people in some way or something, you know. So there's that too. But I think the key to, you know, getting through that is going through that uncomfortable. What's the difference between the psychopathic bureaucratic takeover of the world crap and my own crap? Because we're programmed to take responsibility for both when some of it's ours and some of it's not.
Oh, wow. You know, I was having a conversation last night with my housemate. And we'll go back and forth sometimes. He'll talk about, you know, South America, Peru, and I'll talk about India and our experiences in both places, you know. And I was telling him of an incident that happened to me when I was in the foothills of the Himalayas. I was basically on top of a mountain, and there was a restaurant. And early in the morning, I went, you know, to make myself oatmeal, which I asked them if I could use their burner, you know, which is, there's no like counters, you know, it's all like dirt. And there's like these, I think there was maybe four Indian men sitting around a fire and indoors, you know. And I was just very casually making my food when I noticed that one guy spoke pretty decent English and was kind of relaying certain things to me, and the other people spoke hardly any at all. And I started to see that they were getting upset, like they were angry. And I was like, wait a minute, well, these people are really angry right now. And I was asking what was going on. I was seeing like they're getting really worked up, and they were talking about America, and they were looking at me as a representative of America. And I was like, is it, like, it got to the point where I was like, is this going to get fucking violent right now? Like, that was my only experience of like hostility towards me in that way the whole time I was in India, you know, where it's just like, but I was alone with these guys. And I don't know, I think that they were relating to me making my food with food that I brought somehow, you know, whatever. And I realized in the moment that I had to stress to the guy who could speak relatively decent English to communicate to the other guys that I didn't support my country and that I don't respect my president and that I don't appreciate what we're doing in the world. And, you know, and you'd see things in the paper there that just didn't get any media coverage here. Like there was one point where Bush had, you know, the Bush administration had spent some just insane amount on these missiles that were basically and were said to be the equivalent of like nuclear missiles, even though I guess ultimately there's no nuclear aspect to them. But I was like calling my parents, I was asking them about it, and they were like, we don't know anything about this. I'm like, it's on the front page of every newspaper. And they're like, not here, you know. So there's this conception, you know, but it was really, and but the point being, and the reason why I want to say this and why it's applicable is because it was very insightful to realize that in a lot of places, people can't even it's hard to even comprehend how a citizen could not support their government or like almost at all, or like the actions of the government, that they could really have no identity with that as like a pride, I guess is the word I'm looking for, like dignity in your country, you know, like what your country is about, you know, because they have a lot of pride in a lot of places, you know, and it's like there's patriotism, I guess, in a sense, you know, but it's like this isn't, I don't have any inclination towards that, really. I don't know. Does that feel applicable?
I wonder if it's not even so applicable that it's what Kira was saying, of we're almost forced to apologize for it. I mean, and I've, like I said, major sympathy with that.
That's, yeah, well, there's a reason for that too, because it's fucking insane
right,
what our country right. is doing. And like, as far as identity is concerned, I think that's the thing, is that it's assumed, and that's a control element. You have to identify with your nationality as being your ultimate identity, and I think that that's bullshit. I'm sorry, like. That doesn't mean that you can't recognize and appreciate aspects of a cultural identity, but like nationalism is distinct. I want to mention here, you know, Baruch was just in the main article in the local newspaper here for there's a speaker, Angela Davis, who is giving a talk at UCSC, UC Santa Cruz, basically comparing the black struggle with the Palestinian struggle. On Martin Luther King Day, this happened. And the local, you know, temple, just there's a number of members who were just outraged at her drawing that comparison and basically feeling that she was anti-Semitic for doing that. And so Baruch sent a letter to the Sentinel, and he got a response back from a reporter basically asking him to elaborate on his views. And basically, it was awesome because him and some close friends of his got to basically emphasize that there's a distinction between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism. The reason why this is relevant in this conversation is because you have something that's a political movement, and then you have something that's a cultural identity. And to say that if you're against the political movement, that it automatically assumes that you're against the cultural identity. And that's something that a lot of people don't understand. Like if you, and this doesn't just go for Israel, this is true all over the place. If you want to attack a political ideology, is it assumed in that you're attacking the culture? I would say absolutely not.
Go ahead.
It's how psychopaths in charge fool us into taking responsibility for their bullshit. Okay? It's by design again. We're supposed to feel bad about the decisions that they're making on our behalf, but they're not really making them on our behalf. I'm just saying we should automatically assume that whatever a government is doing is not on behalf of the people. I mean, that's the norm because, you know, the scum rises to the top. So they're, you know, but yeah. they like to use these triggers and these buttons, and just the same. Your story is that on the other side, there's people, you know, that might be friends with Red Ice even, who use the whole anti-Zionism thing to trick people down the road to being anti-Jewish. You know, it works on both sides. You know what I mean? The way that they trick people. And that's what they've been doing for years now is this movement that's been going on online is they've been telling you all about, you know, anti-Zionism and how it's different. But then you go into the back rooms and the dark corners of the internet and it's anti-Jew absolutely. It's one way that you can be led down. Yeah.
It's hard because I actually do totally understand the distinction that David's trying to make here. And Baruch, obviously. So I don't think in itself, right, this trying to make this distinction is not wrong. But as you say, Kira, like this is the really hard part. This is a incredibly valid point that there's a distinction between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. But, as you say, there is 100% people who have no fucking shame in going, they'll say, oh, no, no, I'm anti-Zionist. And then you, as you say, you get them in private, and the first thing they will say is, it's fucking Jews, man. And I was like, I've experienced this so many times that I'm no longer shocked, but I do find it very difficult to, very often find it very difficult to sort of enter those realms. And as you say, this in itself seems to be the design, right? So because in one respect, it's become such a sort of thing that I'm weary of when someone starts saying something about anti-Zionism. I'm like, which one are you? Are you the guy who means that seriously, or are you the guy who is just saying that as a sort of facade?
Yeah.
And that makes it, and now you've made the topic off limits. You've further pushed this topic off limits, which allows the actual Zionist and control system to remain in place. And at the same time, I also see a different by design. This, to me, the push towards this neo-Nazi, right-wing, militarized conspiracy culture is a design. To me, I see very, very clearly, I've been paying attention for over fucking 10 years, going on like 15 years now, to me, watching everything that's been happening since 9/11, being involved in 9/11 truth and different political movements and all alternative research, and watching the words and watching the language change and seeing things that seem like grassroots get co-opted. And to me, the point I'm at right now is, to me, this seems like a controlled opposition, but not just controlled opposition, like the brewing of a Nazi movement, a sort of, you know, these Minutemen, patriot movements, nationalist movements. It's really kind of clear to me how that's being fostered, while at the same time, by fostering it, you can further say, look at all these anti-Semites. Look at all these Nazis out there. You see?
Yeah, like Henry Ford. I mean, I think it's amazing that so many people coming out of World War II were able to get away with what they're able to get away with in terms of extreme profits when both sides are being funded. And the amount of, what was literally allowed the Nazis to do what they did was funded by American corporations and whatnot, no one, that was never in the Nuremberg trials, I mean, these people just, I'm sure that they were nervous. Like, I don't think that they were confident that they would just,
Dude, I was like, I brought this up to my father once or twice, and he freaks out. Like, you bring up really troubling information to some people, and they fucking freak out. because their identity is then threatened by, because they've invested so much into a certain meme or a concept of good guys versus bad guys, that it can't be this, it can't be that. It's this melodrama, black and white, us versus the whatever, the gay conspiracy, the Jewish conspiracy, put whatever minority group you want in there that has no real power, but the right wing wants to scapegoat.
Distinctions in themselves don't separate people. It's people project it's, into the distinctions.
Right. There's hardline tribalism, and then there's like Confederate or cooperative tribalism, or I don't know. It's like, if you're going to be like a bunch of Minutemen that want to then make your own little nation state of just white people or this, and then like protect your culture from infiltration and this kind of shit, it's like, okay, then you're just taking what's wrong on a larger scale and just taking it down to your scale that you can control it. It's still like totally poisonous. Right. So the whole nation state, or that concept of power, you know, attainment through force, I mean, that's what nation states are built on, and then getting a bunch of human energy behind it. It makes no sense. And nation states are obsolete now anyway. It's all a financial game. They're all just like, they're all just corporate labels. So the American corporation, the Russian corporation, all run by former CEOs or people with like all this business background or Secret Service shit. It's all a front. Like the whole geopolitical game, I think, is a pretty big front, even though it has relevance, don't get me wrong, and there's a history there to be studied and understood, and there's dynamics at play, and, you know, even blowback is a real thing. It's not just like every fucking thing is a conspiracy, even though if you want to think of the system as a conspiracy, fine, but which it kind of is, but at the same time, it's the system starts to run itself after a while. We take for granted that it can only be these little groups doing their thing, but at the same time, like, we're all part of something much larger that is also, there's a feedback mechanism at play.
Yeah, that's why I think, I don't know if you guys have checked out Mark Korsky's book, Engines of Domination. That's why I think that is such a brilliant book, because he talks about that, how it's a machine that runs itself, you know, and it's just a self-feeding machine. That's, you know, a tool. It's a tool for making tools out of human beings, you know. So it's this, you know, I understand it as the, you know, psychopathic bureaucratic takeover of the world, but his book is far more deep in his understanding of the process and how it's become a self-serving process. So,
well, yeah,
I don't know if you guys have checked that out, but it's pretty.
I don't know that book, but it sounds interesting, and I'll add it to my list. And I mean, yeah, the system is a self-sorting mechanism. So yeah, it keeps people that abide by it in certain places of power, and people that don't, they're labeled or face different challenges and getting what they need and so on and so forth. So, in that sense, yeah, it does feed itself. So if we're creatures of narrative, which we are, we're always looking for a narrative. And usually it's easy to take the one that's just fed to you. And culture does that to you, for you. Hey, here, I've disempowered you through trauma and all kinds of other psychological nonsense that the culture's put under. And then here's an identity for you. You don't have to figure it out on your own. But at the same time, yeah.
Right.
So it's this, in the things we create. Yeah, I think that obviously conspiracies exist. At the same time, we have to recognize like both sides of the coin. It's like, what gives rise to these weird groups that want to control everything? Why is there even that imperative for control and like hyper sensitivity and lack of whatever? they're all very insecure, I would say. So that everyone's just grasping for something. And so the system makes people feel insecure in that way. And I don't know. I don't know where to draw the line sometimes between these things, but it's all worth considering.
In the fans.
Yeah, it's a, what we have is temporary. It's going to go away eventually. It's just like, you know, contemplating it in your time is interesting, because it's like, God, I can't change. It seems so impossible to change. That's like, what do you do within its context for the time you have?
Kira, can we get your so I sort of I feel like I was trying to get your opinion on this, then I feel like we all sort of jumped in on it. Would you sort of clarify your take on this? You were saying it is a machine that runs itself, but there are people who either started or are sort of you know, in control of the machine, or however you want to sort of phrase that.
Yeah, I mean, I understand it as, you know, if you look at any sort of thing that's messed up about the world, it goes back to our conception of what power even is. And, you know, because an elite group of psychopaths have been, you know, collecting the resources for themselves over centuries, watching human beings so that they can mimic and seem like they're human too. I don't even really think they're fully human because they don't exist in relation to, which is what it means to be human. So there is this sort of conspiracy going on, and it has been going on for thousands of years. But at the same time, it's also a self-serving system because it's existed for so long. It's seeped into the culture, and it's become how we identify ourselves and others. And the system, our laws and everything are built to protect those in power. And but the devious part is any amount of progress is made to look like there's progress is just another layer of protection for them. A great example would be EEO laws. You know, this seems like a great step forward. Civil rights, you know, we're all getting equal. But in actuality, nobody is protected by civil rights laws. People get discriminated against every day. It's impossible to prove that people are discriminating against you because of whatever your protected class is. That's impossible to prove. And the only way that you prove, in quotation marks, is by paying a lawyer to prove it right. For you.
There you go. Thank you.
So you're paying a lawyer to protect your basic human rights. Doesn't seem like a real big step forward. If you're not in a protected class, it's legal to discriminate against you. I mean, it's a ridiculous system, and it protects nobody, but it's presented to us as this huge leap forward. People died for this shit, you know? It's bureaucracy. Okay. That's the main evil that the psychopaths in charge have created to protect themselves and to fuck us and keep us slaves. When people rise up because of their natural will to freedom, they come up with some sort of bullshit law that makes it look like we're getting more rights, but we're just getting fucked in the ass again. I mean, I guess I'm a little bit cynical in that regard, but that is my take on it.
Got to be careful. You got to have a job in the 80s. You got to have some money. Gotta have some money, you can't get no pussy. Listen to the radio, that's what it's about. Listen to Madonna, I'm a material girl in a material world. You ain't got no money, you can't have no pussy. Basically what it is, there's a song out now called Got to Have a J-O-B if you wanna be with me. And lyrics go, ain't nothing going on but the rent. Like if you went up and said, hey babe, what's going on? The rent, motherfucker. Do you have a job? Well, I would get the fuck out of my face. Got to have some money. It says no romance without finance. And women love them songs. They be like, got to have a J-O-B. Janet Jackson got a hit record. What have you done for me lately? That's what they be thinking. What have you done for me lately? The record start off like that. I know he used to do shit for you, but what has he done for you lately? Baby, I love you. What have you done for me lately? You the only thing on my mind. What have you done for me lately? We make good love. What have you done for me lately? Got to have some money to get some pussy in the 80s. It's fucked up. That's why I say, hey, I'm a target. If I ever get married, I have to go off to the woods of Africa and find me some crazy, naked zebra bitch that knows nothing about money. She got to be butt naked on a zebra with a big bone in her nose and a big plate lip and a big fucked up afro. An afro. Afro got to, like Angela Davis seen and go, God damn, that's a fucked up. Afro got to be fucked up and one of them picks with a fist in the back and she got to be butt naked because if she got some clothes, she going to pocket, she going to have to put something in the pocket. So she got to be butt naked on a zebra and y'all think it's a joke. Y'all going to go, I'm going to walk up and say, hey, how you doing? Money? She go, I will, I will, I will. I say, Miss Murphy, Miss Murphy. And I'm bringing her home. Y'all think it's a joke. Y'all going to go past a newsstand one day and see me on the cover of Jet with some woman with a big bone and a plate and a big fucked up afro, butt naked. And y'all going to say, hey, Eddie must be visiting Africa. Y'all say, Murphy marries Bush bitch. I'm going to be like, what? What? Because I ain't getting caught. I refuse to get caught out there. Fuck that. And I'm bringing home and lock her up in the house. You go off to Africa and get you a bush woman, you can't let her mingle with American women because they'll change her shit up. American women stick together. Last thing they want to see is you got some trained bush bitch in your house. They will catch her by herself in the kitchen and throw a monkey wrench in your whole program. As soon as they get alone, they'll be like, I can't stand it. He'd be running behind him doing everything he tell you to do. Who he think he is? You ain't no God. You a human being. You ain't supposed to treat nobody. This house is too big for one person to be cleaned up. Why don't you leave? You always crying. Why don't you just leave the nigga? Oh, you know something, girl. Do you know you can take half his money? Did you know you can take half his money? Did you know that? Did you know you entitled? He didn't tell you entitled to half? Oh, he only told you half the story then, girl. You can take half the money, the car, the house, the children, all the money he got. You can buy all the zebras and bones you want. Go back home and style, girl. You don't have to put up with this shit and get your hair done right. Cut that big afro shit off and go back home to Africa and style. Who the hell he think he is? Let me tell you something else about Eddie Murphy. That motherfucker ain't nothing but a bus. Oh, hi, Eddie. How you doing? Oh, I didn't know you was here. You scared me. Oh, no, I can't stay. I was just talking to Umfufu about a couple of things, huh? No, I got to go. You two, y'all two lovebirds talk. Eddie, talk to your woman. Talk to Umfufu. Y'all got a lot to talk about. Go on, Eddie, please. Talk to her. Umfufu? And leave me in the kitchen with some bush bitch with an attitude. Eddie! I want to talk to you. What's your problem, baby?
I don't like the way you treat me, Eddie. You treat me like an animal.
You was butt naked on a zebra last month.
I don't care, Eddie. I'm an American woman now. I want what's coming to me. Eddie, what have you done for me lately?
America!